What exactly is this? Just a Bible, right? Wrong. It's a Bible for some people, but not others. Believe it or not, the answer to the question, what is the Bible, is different for different people in different times and different places, both in the past and in the present. And how the Bible was different for different groups and different peoples is what I want to talk about today. So I was just at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. Now, I've studied the Bible for over 20 years and have read it cover to cover over 10 times. So I was really excited to be able to go to see a museum dedicated to the Bible. And while I was there, I was reminded of the fact that for different people in different times and different places, the Bible was something else. They had a very different collection of books in their Bible versus maybe another group in a different time, in a different place. Now, I made the trip especially to see the Dead Sea Scrolls. They have some of them on display on rotation every now and then. And so I had to take the opportunity to go and check out some of the ones that they have on display that are incredibly fascinating. They have some of the book of Genesis and others from the Psalms. But then they have other books there that you've probably never heard of. And it was part of the Bible for some of the people in the Dead Sea Scrolls community. In other words, the particular books that they had in what they called the Bible may have been books that you've just simply never heard of and never thought belonged to the Bible. And in fact, the books that you are familiar with, like Genesis, like Jeremiah, might be different than your Genesis and your Jeremiah. And this became really apparent whenever I took a look at some of the Psalms that they had on display. Their Psalms are not necessarily the Psalms that you have in your Bible. In fact, they had over 4,000 Psalms in their collection of the Bible. Whereas most Bibles today have 150 Psalms, some communities have 151, but some communities in the ancient past had way more than that in a collection of Psalms we've never seen before until the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls. So which books belong between these two covers and how the book should read what it says, those have changed throughout history. And those have been different for different people at different times and different places and are still different for various people today. And so the Jews, for example, they have had many different versions of what they call the Bible, what is often called the Old Testament. The Dead Sea Scroll community had books like the Book of Giants or the Book of Enoch or Priestly Service on the Passover. Just many books that we've likely never heard of, and a few that are familiar. Jews in Alexandria at various points in history may have had 46 books in their Bible, whereas Jews in Palestine at various points in history may have had 39 books in their Bible. Some Jews in Palestine would have excluded books like Esther or the Song of Songs, while others would have included them. Those extra books that some of the communities may have had in their Bibles are often called deuterocanonicals or apocryphal books. Different communities label and identify them differently. Now, other Jewish groups, like the Samaritan Jews, may have only had 5 books in their Bible, the first 5 books of what's often called the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, the Torah. And in Christianity, there's been a really wide range of which books belong to the Bible, both in the past and in the present. For the apostles of the New Testament, it appears their Bible was the Old Testament, which many argue included those extra deuterocanonical books. Others say, no, the apostles didn't adhere to those. So there's a big debate on that. But since the New Testament was still being written and compiled at the time, they didn't necessarily use the New Testament. They would have used as their Bible what is often called the Old Testament. One of the first Christians who attempted to compile the New Testament had something really different than what most of us would recognize as the New Testament today. His name was Marcion. And people say he basically rejected the Old Testament, so his Bible didn't include that. He had an edited version of the Gospel of Luke and also edited versions of 10 of Paul's epistles. That was it. That was his Bible. That was his New Testament. And not everybody agreed with his version of the Bible, and so this really caused a lot of people to start to think about the question, all right, what belongs in what we would call the New Covenant or the New Testament? And also, which books belong in the Old Testament? And should the Old Testament just be rejected outright like Marcion did, or do we accept it, and how do we understand it? Marcion caused people to really examine the question, which books belong in the Bible? And so some of the early church fathers after him also differed on the question. Some of them held to a 39-book Old Testament without those Deuterocanonicals. Others maintained that the Deuterocanonicals belonged to the Old Testament. Some of them had certain books of the New Testament in their Bible, like the book of Hebrews or the book of Revelation or 1st and 2nd Peter. Others didn't have Hebrews in their New Testament, or they rejected the book of Revelation and maybe some other New Testament books. And some had extra books in the Old Testament that most people today don't think belongs in the Old Testament. Some of the church fathers, like John of Damascus, had a book in his New Testament that pretty much nobody today says belongs in the Bible. Other communities outside of the church fathers, like the Gnostic communities, had some very radically different Bibles than what most would recognize today. Some of the books included things that would be familiar to us in both the Old and maybe sometimes New Testament, but in other cases they had other books that just most of us have never seen before. Some of these include the Gospel of Truth and the Valentinian Speculation. Others included the Odes of Solomon. Some included the Gospel of Thomas or the Hymn of the Pearl. Other non-Gnostic groups and other groups that were not associated with the church fathers held the books like this: the Gospel of the Hebrews, the Gospel of the Ebionites, the Secret Gospel of Mark, the Gospel of Bartholomew, the Gospel of Nicodemus. Other groups held the books like the Infancy Gospel of James, the Infancy Gospel of Thomas, the Acts of John, the Acts of Peter, the Acts of Paul. Some of them had wild apocalypses other than the book of Revelation: the Apocalypse of Ezra, the Apocalypse of Peter, the Ascension of Isaiah, the Apocalypse of Paul, the Thunder Perfect Mind. And it goes on and on and on. In fact, I could give you hundreds, if not thousands, of other books that some Jews and some Christians believed belonged in the Bible. And not just Christians and Jews, but also Muslims have a version of the Bible. It includes the Torah, the Gospel, and the Psalms, minus anything in them that would negate something found in the Quran. Catholic Bibles haven't always been the same. Many medieval Bibles included the Epistle to the Laodiceans by the Apostle Paul, whom Pope Gregory the Great believed actually authored this epistle, which is why many Catholic communities included it in medieval Catholic Bibles. It's not in any Catholic Bible today, but for a medieval Catholic, it was very familiar. Eastern Orthodox have had different versions of the Bible. Some of them included the Deuterocanonicals. Others rejected them, like the Philaret Catechism for the Russian Orthodox Church that mentions, at least at that time, an exclusion of the Deuterocanonicals. Not all Russian Orthodox agree with that. Some of them hold to these Deuterocanonical books. And in addition to the Deuterocanonical books, many Orthodox actually believe that there's even more books to the Old Testament that Catholics don't have, and some Eastern Orthodox don't have. For example, the Orthodox Study Bible mentions 3rd Maccabees as part of its Bible, in addition to the Prayer of Manasseh, and also Psalm 151, as opposed to what most people would say is just 150 Psalms. That is, unless you're part of the Qumran community that gave us the Dead Sea Scrolls, that would say there's probably about 4,000 more Psalms that belongs to the Bible. And the Oriental Orthodox don't necessarily agree with Catholics or Eastern Orthodox about the canon of the Bible, about which books belong in the Bible. Some of them, like the Ethiopian Orthodox, have 81 books in their Bible. For example, for their Old Testament, they would include 1st Enoch, and for the New Testament, books like 1st Clement. And yet other Oriental Orthodox communities reject these books. The Protestants have a different Bible than some of the Catholics and some of the Eastern Orthodox. For example, they would tend to reject the Deuterocanonicals, although a few of them would accept them. And people like Martin Luther, who rejected the Deuterocanonicals, actually also rejected some books of the New Testament, like the Epistle of James. Whereas other Protestant communities would completely reject that and say, no, James belongs to the New Testament. Some communities, like the Anglicans, would occasionally accept the Deuterocanonicals. Others would tend to reject them. And in a really wild case, I actually got to see the Slave Bible in the Museum of the Bible at Washington, D.C. Now, this is a fascinating case because a specific Anglican group created this Bible to keep slaves as slaves. They took out anything in the Bible that made them think that slavery was bad, that spoke about freedom from slavery, and only kept in things there that reinforced slavery. So 90% of the Protestant Old Testament is missing, and 50% of the Protestant New Testament is also missing. Anything that speaks of the equality of man, anything that speaks about liberation and freedom from slavery, anything that speaks of like the story of the Exodus, the Israelites being freed from slavery, all of that is thrown out. And the only things that are reinforced are those things that reinforce slavery, which goes to show you how oftentimes the Bible was politicized and used to reinforce a certain agenda. And this is just one case of many. For example, another one that I saw at the Museum of the Bible was the Jefferson Bible. The third president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson, gutted parts of the New Testament and significantly altered the Gospels. Why? Because they were in conflict with his views on miracles and supernatural events. Once again, often the Bible was politicized and was sometimes adjusted to fit a person's pre-existing theology. I mean, even someone like Martin Luther in part rejected the Deuterocanonicals because one of them worked against him in his debate with Johann Eck on the question of purgatory and prayers for the saints. And this is a point I really have to stress because for several thousand years now, the Bible has often been a reflection of what a community wanted it to be, to reinforce whatever theological views, whether legitimate or not, that they wanted to maintain. Whether out of good motives or bad motives, this is just simply the case. It's a fact of history. Now, so far, we've mostly only reflected on questions concerning the canon, which books belong to the Bible, which books belong between the two covers of what we call the Bible. But also, there's a wide range of translations, both ancient and modern, that sometimes significantly give different understandings or different readings of the same books and same chapters of the Bible. And in some cases, some chapters may be missing, and other chapters may be added. Some verses may be missing, and others may be added. And whether something is missing or is added really depends on a person's perspective on whether or not they think that that thing should already be there or not. So some are going to say the longer ending of Mark should be there, and translations and versions of the New Testament that don't have it are missing it. Whereas others who don't feel it's original, they're going to say that those translations and versions that do have it are adding it. And I'll add, when it comes to translations, some translations radically change the meaning of what other translations say, both for the Old Testament and the New Testament. And to make it even more complex, sometimes New Testament quotes of Old Testament texts differ in the Greek New Testament than the Hebrew version of the scriptures that they're quoting. And even more perplexing are those cases where the New Testament is quoting the Old Testament in a way that doesn't match anything that we have in the Hebrew Old Testament. And in addition to these complications of which books belong to the Bible, the question of the canon, and which translation, which version is accurate, we also have a very great diversity of readings in the manuscripts that we have available today, making it very hard to reconstruct what the original may have said because we don't have any of the originals, we don't have any of the autographs, and the entire field of textual criticism is dedicated to attempting to reconstruct what those originals look like because all of the copies we have can sometimes be very, very significantly different in their readings, whether ancient or more contemporary manuscripts. There's sometimes a wide variety of readings that sometimes do impact the meaning of the text. And it really seems that most scholars in the field of textual criticism just believe we can't even reconstruct the originals. They don't even believe it's possible. A minority, however, still maintains that it's possible that we could reconstruct the originals, at least in most parts that are essential for doctrine. Now, what constitutes something that is essential for doctrine is itself going to be debated. And to top it all off, some of the earliest manuscripts that we have are still 1,000 years removed from whenever the book was supposed to have been written. So the point is this, when we speak of the Bible, we have to be really careful to recognize that it has not always meant the same thing for different people throughout history and even presently. And unless we're aware of this, there's going to be a lot of confusion caused whenever we speak of which books belong to the Bible or which translation or which particular reading, because again, there is a big diversity both throughout history and in the present. Well, I hope you enjoyed this video and found it educational and informative. If you did, please hit the like button and hit the subscribe button. Drop a comment there in the comment section so I can hear your thoughts. And make sure to check me out at Patreon, patreon.com/reasonandtheology. Thank you.